Wow. Thank you. I don't know if you see some of these comments. Fantastic lesson. And I just kind of want to say wow and just fade into the background and let you and Kimberly and Tekulbe talk. If you want to go there, I would love to hear them respond and to add to what you've had to say today. Do we want to do
Well,
that?
yeah, but I want
Okay.
to ask a question. So I guess because I love the focus on Hagar, and actually the final revolutionary Black Panthers. I don't know whether that was intended part of the lesson or not, but but part of when you hear the words "you belong" or "we want you here," there's often a subtext that is, "we want you here, you belong our way, by our rules, looking like showing up in the way we want you to." And I think using the examples you did, LaShawn, I think you're saying, no, that's not necessarily what showing up means. Showing up doesn't necessarily mean my way, our way. And would you, yeah, I don't know, you're shaking your head like yes, but speak to that if you would.
No, I agree. I agree. I think that that's what happens when we're in a position of privilege. I want you to come make me feel comfortable. So yeah, you're welcome. You're welcome. Please come, but just come be like me. So I don't have to do any work to like expand my own self and become more of a covenant person by opening myself to you and allowing myself to be influenced. I don't know that we say you belong because belonging is reciprocal. I say you belong because it's an invitation, right? And so we have talks. Come join us. The assumption is come be like us. But the action, the practice is, hey, come bring the best of what you have and let us add to it. Are we accepting the best that they have? And are we actually adding to it? Because a lot of times conversion, at least within my experiences, my family and our faith journey has been, we've had to try and convert not only to the gospel. The gospel is something we knew. We knew Jesus. We had to convert to the culture of the church. And that works until it doesn't. And for us, it's very obvious that we don't convert into the culture of the church, right? But there's that ongoing process of like breaking yourself up against the culture of the church and trying to figure out what that means. I've talked in other places about like my dating experiences and the expectations around who I was supposed to date, who I was supposed to marry, all the things I was supposed to do, particularly as a woman, then as a Black woman, and now as a Black mother, and now as a Black divorcee. Like there are so many expectations that have made it hard. I've run away many times, but I've been told you belong and I need you here on your terms, LaShawn. That beauty of personal revelation, I think maybe we need to believe people a little bit more when they've had it. So we can say, okay, what is God telling you and how do I support you in what you're hearing so that we can all be nurtured and benefit from your existence? I don't know. Kimberly, it's Colby. What do you all think?
I agree with that. I was just thinking about like while we were talking, I went back to the verses and reading the second time that Hagar leaves, like the time that she's cast out. It talks about how like Abraham, who is like supposedly this new man in the covenant, like he has this name and stuff, he still is like, oh shoot, I'm between a rock and a hard place now. And so I'm just gonna like gently touch this woman who I had a child with. I'm gonna give her a piece of bread. I'm gonna give her some water. I'm gonna send her on her way. Like it just sounds like a pretty sorrowful, resigned, like, I don't know if this is the thing to do, but I'm gonna try to do this like in the best way that I can. And Hagar is devastated, right? So she goes to the woods, she like because there's no longer a bush to die. She's like, let me just get far away enough that I like don't have to be reminded of this stuff that's happening. And that's when the Lord comes to her again and it's like I have a plan for you that's gonna work. But I think about like how often the church might function as, like Abraham with the bread. Like we see these people that don't fit and we're like, well, I'm going to try and do this in the most gentle way I can, like tell you that you don't have a place. And then, you know, sometimes as we know, it's not even that gentle, right? But I think like a lot of us, especially the kind of like dialogue stuff, can be like Abraham with the bread. And both times in this story, it's God and the people that God is like directly informing that says, no, you belong here, go back where you belong here, go and do what you're going to do. But I think we who have taken upon ourselves the name of Christ in maybe a different way than everybody else had at that time, or it was something that Abraham was still learning about what it meant to like be made new in a covenant. It, you know, it behooves us to think about at what point that becomes our job to go out and find people that don't belong in and bring them back in and be receptive to what the Lord has to tell us and how we can be his hands to bring those people back in, as opposed to it being the Lord always functioning in this role of telling people that they belong to go back. It's like you said, like we have to be prepared to support the revelation that people have. When they feel a pull to come back or do whatever it is they're going to do the Lord's work. But I also think we have to be the vessel of that revelation to people, to tell people that they have a place, that God has a place in the plan for them. And instead of being Abraham with the bread, being like, okay, well, I'm going to figure out like how to nicely shun folks. Like, how can we be the vessel that brings them in?
You know, LaShawn, you and I had a conversation yesterday. We were talking about belonging and membership. And we're saying there are some organizations or some bodies that say in order to have belonging or membership with us, we're going to strip you of everything that you are and make you what we feel like you should be. And then there are others that say, we're going to bring you in all that you are and be willing to be transformed by who you are. And I think the body of Christ or the church of Christ was intended to be the latter, but it sometimes get presented as the former because we get comfortable in the fact that in a religious faith where our congregations are geographically designed, that we are used to the people in the pews looking like us and speaking like us and dressing like us and living like us, because our fellow congregants are often our neighbors, and we choose neighborhoods with the intent on being comfortable and belonging. And so the image that came to my mind as I was listening today is actually elementary school PE class. And even though I was always like a little guy, because, you know, 5 foot nothing, I loved the days when we played tug of war in PE. And I learned an interesting lesson as an elementary school, you know, student that I often use in my adult life. And sometimes you have to let go, not because you're giving up, but because you have to get a firmer grip. And we are sometimes in the gospel shamed for letting go and not looking at the larger picture of, well, why am I letting go? And sometimes it is necessary for us to let go of church or church attendance or whatever it is in order to get a firmer grip on it, so that we are anxiously engaged in the duty of belonging. And if I truly belong on this side of the rope, but my grip is weak, I can't fulfill my obligation. But if I know that the three people who are in the little loop, because, you know, there's always the guys in the class that want to be in the loop. But as long as I know that the loop is solid, then I know that I have a couple of seconds to let go, get a better grip, and then do my part. And for me, I can always trust that in my loop are the strengths of the Black pioneers, the strength of my mom and others in her generation who had to make a conscious choice to leave the faith traditions of our culture to accept the gospel and to raise, you know, my generation in the gospel. But also there are leaders, present day leaders of various races who are in that loop that say, I recognize your struggle. I can empathize even when I can't sympathize because that is not my struggle, but I am willing to lend the strength of my privilege to your efforts to pull your testimony to this side of that line. And I think we have to create more space for the loop standards and those of us who at times need to let go in order to adjust our grip.
Yeah, I was also thinking, I don't know, I think it relates to what you were saying, but I thought of it when you were talking, something you said, LaShawn, about like the body of Christ, and then you started talking about stomach aches and the body and like whatever. And I know we as therapists are used to looking at, you know, especially us, I think, maybe not every therapist is like this, but looking at the body holistically and saying, you know, especially when we're talking about emotions and how they function, like there's so much about a body that has purpose and meaning, and when it hurts, it's saying something. Like, and so looking at all of us as being a part of the body of Christ, how can we kind of shift to a paradigm where we see people hurting and we're not immediately trying to like close it down, shut it down, make it better right away, but we're looking at like, what is the function of this pain? Like what is this part of the body trying to say about how the rest of the body can function? If I have a pain in my side, I could like, I don't know, adjust, but it's also telling me something about the relative strength of the other parts of my body around that area. So then how can I attend in a more meaningful way rather than like shut down what the function of that thing is supposed to be?
Yeah, there's a question in the chat from Paul about those of us who live in Utah as a community. We live in Utah, which is a community that has designated February as Black History Month. I mean, February as a month to be kind, not officially as Black History Month. I mean, you know, Paul, we just got past MLK Day being Human Rights Day and not MLK Day, right? So these pieces, these steps. Paul says, I've not seen any official publication or government entity, even like the public library, even acknowledge that it is nationally Black History Month. How is it possible to be kind and show love while turning aside and not joining the celebration of the accomplishments and contributions, specifically of people of color, specifically Black people? It feels very passive aggressive, and I have no idea what I could or should do about it. It sends a really strong, you don't belong message to part of our community. To me, that channels my inner Ishmael to come out fighting, ready, always, you know, just being a wild ass of a person. It's in the Bible. I'm not cussing. I'm just saying, like, then we have to show up. What did you say, Chloe?
I got you.
Right. So we have to show up. That's the thing. And so even if our state isn't doing it, if we believe people belong, how do we help facilitate that conversation? Even just asking the question is, I think, enough to facilitate. How do we really create belonging? I don't think we're good at it in Utah. I don't. As a government, I don't think we're good at it. So it's okay that you're noticing it because I think you're noticing what's real. And these kinds of conversations about, well, what can I do to say something about belonging? what's important to me. I saw a really just a simple, cute example. See if there is a historical figure that you share a birthday with and learn about that person. And if you've got a family, then do it with your spouse. And if you have kids, do it with your kids. If you've got pets, what day did you adopt your pet? Like, see what kinds of connections you can already make organically within the space where you live, and then go from there. And then it's a fun, neutral topic of conversation. Y'all, guess what I did to learn more about Black History Month? I had no idea that I shared a birthday with insert the person, or I shared a birthday with this event that happened in Black History Month. Like, there's so many different ways to start. And I think belonging is a process of deciding to start and then continuing and then nurturing, maintaining, repairing over and over again. Yes, Medgar Evers. That's a wonderful one, July 2nd. My mama has that birthday too. I'm gonna let her know.
LaShawn, therapist moment here. You know, I had, so what if, can we just play a game of what if? What if we had the state of Utah and the church in our offices as a person, right? What would we see? Because I think it's easy to ask, what's wrong with you? And not as easy to ask what has happened to you. And I think that if we look at the state of Utah and the circumstances around it becoming a state, and how, you know, people even ended up here, and the church from start to finish, and we start to ask what happened to you, our state and our faith would probably meet the diagnostic criteria for PTSD, right?
Well, say, be careful, because they're not in the office, but yes.
Right, right. No, but what I'm saying is, but they, like, as a state and as a church, we would meet the criteria for PTSD. So how do you deal with a traumatized client? Well, you have to validate their story, right? And so, and this is kind of coming to me the present time too, so I'm gonna have to chew on this too, but now it kind of starts to make sense that if you have been exiled and silenced and, you know, oh, I'm going to use this word, and please excuse me. My mission president told me that I was the J. Golden Kimball of his mission. So, but if you have been bastardized time and time and time again, would it make sense that it becomes uncomfortable for you to hear anyone share a narrative that doesn't center you in it? Would it be scary to think that even if we shifted the focus for 28 or 29 days away from, you know, a pioneer heritage and our religious, you know, standards of being kind and welcoming to center, you know, Black voices, what if we never get centered again? What if we then get exiled again, and now everyone is, oh yeah, this feels good, let's keep talking about this, and then here we go in our emotional hand carts again, here we go on a search for another Zion again, because our traumatic experience has been, we move into a place, we settle a place, we make a place bloom, and then we get kicked out. And what happens if we make this place bloom with all voices without ours being centered? At what point then do we get kicked out again? You know, so when you can make sense of the context of people's behavior, then you can make sense of their behavior. And it's a really simple solution. Black history is world history. Black history is LDS history. And if we go back and we begin to include in the history of 1830, not just the stories that are comfortable, that center the European convert voices, but it also includes the voices of Jane Elizabeth Manning James, right? And those Black saints who joined the church in 1830, if it begins to center the or not even center, but just it include the voices of Elijah Abel, right? Who received the priesthood from the hands of Joseph Smith, who served as a 70, right? And say, you know, that's not Black Mormon history. That is Mormon history. And if we begin to share in the collective sadness that from this period, you know, from 1856, was it, or 1853 to 1978, how was the church as a whole robbed of the blessings that would have come from the priesthood service of all people of God? How much more meaningful would the experience in primary have been when all the children could sing with confidence, you know, families can be together forever, instead of little Black children singing the words but not having a true connection to it? And so I think, you know, to answer the question, what can Utah do? I think when Utah starts to see that Black history is Utah history, we will be uncomfortable with Martin Luther King Day being known as Civil Rights Day. And we will be uncomfortable with February being Let's Be Kind Month. And so I think we have to get comfortable being uncomfortable in the moments where our own narratives are not centered.
Thank you. So LaShawn and Kimberly, I know I have to go, and probably you to Colvay. So I just want to, you know, maybe just end. I'm going to be coming back to this lesson and sharing it, especially with students of color at BYU who this past week have especially been struggling and wondering whether they belong and who want to be seen. And I'm so struck in thinking about this lesson and this idea that these blessings that are promised to Abraham are for both of his sons. and that even, you know, Hagar, I love, you know, she's sent away the second time, but God is coming in and still saying that these blessings are yours. You get to claim them. And the people who are excluding you don't have any power over that. Like, they don't get to decide that. They might want to send you away, but you still belong. You belong with me. Anyway, Chris, I'm just blown away. This is, I knew exactly what we needed. So thank you, LaShawn, who had to go. And thank you to Colvay and Kimberly. Are you in?
No, I just thank you. I do have one reaction to what Colvay was saying, and I just want to, my reaction, and that's all it is that what you're calling for will change the story, and we need that change. We need that new story. But we also need and I'm going to say this with a white face, we need that comment. We need a new story. We need the expanded story. And we need people with faces like mine to say that. Let me say it that way. I'm not going to apologize. That's, you know, a role I sit holding in this session. We need to all be saying we need that fuller story. Thanks.
So here's a thought, Chris. In our current narrative, there's no kind way to paint President Brigham Young, right? But in a new narrative, he can be painted as a very wise prophet. Because when you look at what was going on outside of the church, you know, with segregation and Jim Crow laws and things, especially in the South, I've often asked myself, like, if my grandfather in the 50s was called to be bishop of my ward in Georgia, and as a ward, you know, even if we like went to the temple or we went to eat, because in the South, you know, we do that sometimes, how defeating it would be as a bishop to not be able to use the same door as your ward, or to drink from the same fountains as your ward, or if, you know, a white sister in your ward needed to come to you to make a confession of any kind, you know, how much conflict it would have created with the larger society to have you as a Black man behind a closed door with a white woman having that type of conversation. You know, and when God says my house is a house of order, like how disorderly would that have really been in that moment? And I think that if the narrative would have been one where President Brigham Young, understanding the social climate of the day, had a conversation with the church and said, you know, this is going to hurt all of us, but especially our brothers and sisters of African descent. But I believe what might be the best course of action as we try to establish the restored gospel is to temporarily suspend the ordination of the priesthood, you know, to our brothers of African descent, and understand that if, you know, these families pass away before the time comes for us to resume these ordinations, then it is on us to make sure that the temple ordinances are performed for these faithful families. And let us join in fasting and prayer to speed up the day when the social climate can change, so that these blessings can be restored not only to us, but to the earth. I think the history would have been different, the feel would have been different, and the pain would have been different. But when it just kind of comes out of nowhere as this, you know, thing that's from God, based on this idea that we may or may not be cursed, that's a very painful narrative to ask people to take on, when the alternative narrative, though still painful, though the results are still the same, you know, no priesthood to 1978, I think it would have been so much different. And a lot of the criticism that the church has received because of this practice may not have been there. But that's just my thought.
Yeah, that's thanks for that. I'm thinking about you know, LaShawn's compassionate treatment of Sarah, and kind of comparing that too with Brigham Young, right? So both of them, you know, maybe don't want the conflict that's going to come from recognizing all of the children of God, all of the children of promise that are part of this house, part of the body of Christ, they don't want to deal with that conflict, and they have kind of a lack of imagination of how this can work out, right? Because of the tensions that are there. And then as I was teaching, my husband and I teach the Valiant Nine class. And so in primary today, one of the main kind of points of the lesson was there's all these like obstacles, but God overcomes them. Like you can't imagine how it's going to work out, but God can make it happen. James Baldwin shares a quote from Emerson that says something like, God speaks to us through our imaginations, but we often don't allow ourselves to imagine, to kind of grapple with, understand kind of the vision and will of God. And that lack of imagination creates us to come up with our own, to create division instead of belonging, right? And I see, you know, really great parallels from what LaShawn was talking about with the story of Abraham and Sarah and Hagar, and then the church's early history.
I know Tekovich, you get to talk, but how I react to what you're just saying, Rebecca, is that many of us think there should be an apology, and that whole topic of apologizing raises the question of what do you apologize for? And it seems what Tekovich brought out is that you might apologize for a better or worse politically expedient decision back in 1852, and you could debate whether that was a smart thing or not a smart thing, but that the damage that maybe we need the most apology for is the explanations and rationalizations, the directing a decision to God's will or to a distinction about people being less worthy or whatever. There have been lots of explanations, but maybe that those explanations are the thing that are most damaging and most need apology.
But, you know, we often say the best apology is a behavior change, right? And I don't expect, and again, I can only speak for me. I cannot speak for the rest of Black membership of the church. But for me, I don't expect President Nelson to apologize for decisions that were made by President Young. And my understanding is at some point in, you know, on the other side, I'll get an opportunity to sit down, you know, with President Young. He might be a little surprised when I call him Cousin Brigham, because surprise, same family tree, you know, and he and I can hash that out. He and I can hash that out, and he's had how many hundreds of years now to kind of sit with it and think about it, you know. And I look forward to having that conversation with him. But I think what I need from President Nelson as the spokesperson for the present church is simply an acknowledgement that there have been decisions and a culture created within the church that he now leads that are rooted in beliefs that are not consistent with the gospel of Jesus Christ. And that and he can even say this, that the best apology that we as a church can offer to Latter-day Saints of African descent is a noticeable change in behavior and what we teach to be the gospel and the will of God. Do it in 2 minutes. Allow us to clap in general conference. And I'm what that looks like. I mean, small things that people never think about. We encourage our youth to go to the temple to do baptisms for their ancestors. And we, you know, describe it as this really, really, really sacred experience. And we have yet to think about the little Black girl who just got her hair braided, you know, on Wednesday, whose ward is going to do baptisms on Friday after school. And are we going to ask her to go and get her hair wet? And then use that horrible, whatever, low-grade shampoo that they offer, right, to get the chlorine on your hair. But how simple is it to just have, like, a hair covering in the baptistry for the little Black girls with braids or other hairstyles? Because there's a recognition and that there's a different way that we maintain our hair than other groups of people. And you want to talk about feeling a sense of belonging? Like, think about what it would feel like for that little girl to walk into the baptistry and to have a worker offer her, and it could even be white, just like a white swim cap even, so that she can participate in the baptisms and not have to worry about the damage to her hair. Just those little simple things that we don't think about. Or when a young man receives his mission call and there are pictures of, you know, the missionary grooming standards, and there's no one there that looks like him. You know, how much more of a sense of belonging he would feel to just see it represented for him, you know, what is the grooming standard and expectation for my hair. When I was on my mission, they came out with this standard that they wanted our hair either, you know, brushed or combed to the back or parted and then brushed or combed to the side. And I raised my hand and I said, "President, my hair does not do that. Like, that is not, you know, a thing that is within the capability of my hair." And yet, as, you know, a leader in the mission, I think I was a zone leader at the time, like, I want to set the standard for my elders and sisters, but I don't have a template. Like, what am I supposed to do? And so it's those little things that if the narrative shifted and included everyone, we would know exactly what to do.
All right. We're coming up on, what is it, 1 p.m. almost. So we feel a lot of freedom in being able to continue the conversation, but we probably need to let everybody go too. Thanks again. Thanks everybody who's sticking around. Share this recording. Michael, are you there? Yeah.
Okay. I am here. I'm just muted.
All right.
But it's a really good discussion, everyone. Thank you very much. And we will have this up. And this time we will have it up with the after chatter in some form. So
thank you.
All right.
All right. Thanks, everyone. Bye.